I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. One thing's for sure, there's no shortage of great eating in Kansas City. From casual barbecue to formal seven-course meals, you can find just about anything to please your palate. And one of the reasons this is such a great food town, the creative minds behind the kitchen doors. Today, we've invited three well-known chefs to our studios to talk about local food, the restaurant business, and creativity. We'll talk about how they respond to reviews, and we'll issue a little challenge of our own. Chefs Selena Teo, Ted Haberger, and Debbie Gold get ready to plate on Up to Date after this hour's news. I'll give you just a few minutes to come up with a dream concoction. So they did, or more precisely, they will during our show today. And on top of that, we'll visit with these three chefs and we'll talk about how they feel about food reviews, their toughest day in the business, the importance of local ingredients, and we'll answer this question: is Kansas City a cutthroat restaurant town or not? Joining us today, Chef Ted Haberger is owner, executive chef of Room 39 on 39th Street. Ted, it's always good to have you here.
Hi, Steve.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
Thanks. Debbie Gold's also here. She's executive chef at the American Restaurant. Debbie, good morning.
Good morning.
Good
Thank
to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Selena Teo's here. She's owner, executive chef from Julian in Brookside. And Selena, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Ted, we're all familiar with this idea of local food. You sort of have built your business on it, sourcing food from your own area instead of importing it from someplace else. Of course, there are exceptions, ocean fish and ingredients that can't be found in the Midwest. Is local food here to stay, or is it a trend?
Oh, no, I think it's always been here. I think we got away from it a little bit as consumers, probably in the 50s and 60s with packaged foods. And then, as chefs, we always try to find the most exotic ingredients. And and that's absolutely part of our trade. But I always, try to use as much local things as possible. But I still like things from exotic places, that's for sure. Just think about vanilla beans. We don't grow vanilla beans here. We don't grow lemons here. We don't grow limes. We have to have all of those ingredients in our food. Well, we don't have to, but I sure like them.
Yeah.
I like them.
Well, Debbie, sometimes, folks think about local food and they think it's more expensive somehow. Is it? Is that your experience or not?
Well, actually, if you're going to buy from the local farmers, it is going to be a little bit more expensive than the mass-produced product that you're going to find in the grocery store. But the trade-off is you get better quality, you get better flavor, because most likely it's going to go from you're going to get the tree-ripened fruit, and you just can't beat anything when it's in its season. So there's a trade-off. And the other part is you're supporting the local community, which I think is really important as well. So,
well, Selena, Debbie just said it's great when it's in season, but we're about to leave the seasons here. We're going into winter, and the temperature is going to dip dramatically later on this week. What about that? What do you do in winter when there's no local produce?
Well, one of the things I love about this area, Kansas City, is you have four distinct seasons that are all equal in length, which is, like, from a chef's point of view, I don't know about you, but I love that.
Because
you get to see everything. You get everything. And just when you're, I don't know if I ever get tired of corn or tomatoes, but if you do, new stuff's coming up.
You get
the autumn squashes are coming in. Yeah.
You get re-inspired.
Yeah, it's like asparagus. I love asparagus, but I only love it for about 2 or 3 months. And right about now, asparagus has been done for 4 months or so.
You're craving it.
Yeah, and you start to crave it again. And by the time, April rolls around, you're really craving it.
Yeah.
You're ready.
So,
sure.
Selena, you don't look at winter as a dead zone then?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of things you can do.
Well, what's the most beautiful piece of local produce you saw this summer, Ted? And did the heat wind up affecting supply or the quality?
Actually, the most – I just did that dinner for – Powell Gardens.
I was going to ask you about it. Yeah,
called Under the Harvest Moon, and it was really neat to go out to that space because they've got everything. You know, they've got and a lot of exotic ingredients, including some citrus fruits that they're able to put inside and everything during the winter. But cardoons. I've never really seen the plant growing in a garden before, and it was amazing. I mean,
Powell Gardens,
at Powell Gardens, yeah, it looks like a big, huge celery plant that's kind of splayed open with kind
it's
of
beautiful.
This. Yeah, it was gorgeous, and you know, working with it is difficult because it's, you know, it's got little stingers on it and stuff. But that was a beautiful thing to see.
What do you do with it?
Well, you cook it for a long time, and then I actually brought some with me, if that's okay.
Oh, cool.
For this, I just mixed it with a little bit of cream cheese and a little bit of salt and pepper, and I just call it cardoon spread.
So you always bring us a little treat when you come here, don't
always,
you?
Always.
And we really appreciate that, too. That's why you keep coming back, Tim.
That's right.
That's the only reason you
keep
coming back.
Yeah. That's how I keep you asking me, right?
Yeah. What was the most beautiful piece of produce you saw this year, Debbie?
I'm trying to think. You know, I had one farmer that was growing sorrel. Right now I'm using wild persimmons, which I think are delicious.
Mm-hmm. Another difficult thing to work with, but...
No. They have like wild plums right now. Tomatoes were okay this year. It was
melons.
Kind of hard. Melons.
I thought my melons I got were unbelievable.
Really?
Yeah, they had really good flavor, but... with the way the weather was this year, like I was getting local peaches as well, and they kind of came and then were gone.
Well, what did the drought do to all this? So I would have thought that maybe it would have really wreaked havoc with what you were trying to work with.
Well, what I noticed from my farmers is quantity was a lot lower, and some of them were trying really hard to keep their gardens basically growing and irrigating, which got expensive. So you kind of had less quantity to work with, and seasons went really quickly as well on most items.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the case of melons, though, I feel like the drought and the lack of rain really concentrated all the flavors, which is why I think the melon season this year was just phenomenal.
Why would that happen?
Well, kind of like grapes, they just need to be stressed a little bit. And, you know, if you have a heavy rain and then a little bit afterwards, the melons, they taste diluted.
Oh, that's
and
great.
And then there's
they have
the
to
lack
work
of
harder
rain.
To grow. So yeah. Intensifies the flavor.
And they were just, every single melon I had was delicious, like crazy delicious.
Mm.
In fact, they changed a lot after that hurricane came through. You know, like
really?
The melons before that were really concentrated in flavor. And then after that, because of that extra water in the ground, it soaks it all up.
Can you anticipate that as a chef? I mean, did you know that was going to happen because the drought would affect things in a certain way and the stress would add flavor to certain things?
Well, that would, but you never know what the weather's going to hold in the near future.
Yeah.
If I had known that, I would have maybe done something more with my patio earlier.
Well, Ted, you just mentioned you took part in this event called Under a Harvest Moon, a farm-to-table dinner, which was a benefit for our friends out at Powell Gardens. What is a farm-to-table dinner exactly?
Well, it's a situation where we try to use everything local that was going to be on the plate. And I kind of made a joke when I was out there. I told everybody, I was like, well, not everything is local, I'm sorry to say. And they kind of all started frowning at me. And I'm like, oh, the peppercorns are from India. You know, the salt is from really who knows where, plus the Hawaiian salt that I had. But pretty much everything else we tried to keep local. Any olive oil I used, of course, was from California, from Italy. But but everything else was from the garden or one of 17 different producers that I had. In fact, we had caviar on there, and I brought some of that with me today, too. But it's from Osage Beach, Missouri.
Really?
From a farmer down there who grows paddlefish and then harvests the roe. And it's really very good caviar.
No kidding. Well, this idea of farm-to-table dinners, that's sort of become a new trend in a way, in a sense, hasn't it?
I mean, it's, again, something that's has been done since we settled in the plains, you know. I mean, that's basically how we ate.
Yeah.
But the notion of doing these dinners has kind of come into vogue recently, the last 7 or 8 years for the most part. But Green Dirt Farm does a series of those throughout the summer, and they're a lot of fun to do. And I enjoy doing them because it's a challenge. I got to do things that I had – you know, I took some risks. I made fennel ice cream, which is something I hadn't made before, and using the seeds from the fennel plant, and you know,
we just try to use everything they produce, so it helps one promote the local farmers. Like I did the Green Dirt Farm dinner as well, and I had cheese in every single course I did.
How often do you take risks, Debbie? You know, Ted was just talking about that. How do you? How often do you do that?
Oh, I think I probably do it a lot. I've always had sort of the curiosity of flavors and pairing flavors together and using different ingredients. And, you know, like Ted said, the exotic ingredients that you don't get locally, or I didn't grow up eating, for some reason I've developed a curiosity of like, ooh, what's that? Ooh, what else can you do with it? So I play a lot with different things and try to take stuff traditionally and put a twist on it, I guess.
Yeah. I had a real fun thing at her restaurant one time at a James Beard dinner called Finger Limes, which I had never had before in my life. And everyone's nodding, you know. And it's like it's almost like lime caviar. Like you squeeze it out of these, they look like little fingers, and it's lime-flavored caviar.
And we are back. And this is such a fun week here on Up to Date, my birthday week. It's our 10th anniversary of doing this program. All kinds of good things going on here on our show. We're just thrilled to be here. I'm thrilled to be here today with Chef Ted Habiger, Debbie Gold, Selena Teo, Selena, executive chef from Julian and Brookside, Debbie from the American Restaurant, and Chef Ted, our regular, semi-regular guest here on Up to Date from Room 39. On 39th Street. We're talking about restaurants, the business, how the economy has hit people. And Debbie, off mic there a few minutes ago when we first went off on break, you were saying that, you know, working in a restaurant, working as a chef, typically ranks as one of the top 10 most stressful jobs on most lists. Am I right about that?
Well, I you know, I think I've heard that. I don't know officially, but it's
what
pretty
do you think?
Oh, yeah. It's very stressful. I mean, you never know what's going to happen. Even though the menu may stay the same over and over and over, you're doing the same food, but you never know how the orders are going to come in. There's always something. And I think it was Selena that said it's probably the line cook who has it more stressful than the chef. We just get to yell louder than the rest of them.
Selena, what's the most stressful thing for you?
Whether or not the plumbing in my 100-year-old building is going to go out on a Saturday night.
That would not be good. Has that happened before?
Yes, it has.
Yeah, and you did what?
I kindly directed them to my friendly neighbor at the roastery while I waited on Roto-Rooter or somebody.
Yeah, I guess.
Can you do?
And Ted, you were saying before the show that some days you might have 50, 60 guests in the restaurant in room 39, and other days not that many. It just is fluctuating
you
all over
the
place.
You never really know. That's one of the challenges. You know, we all take reservations, of course, but probably Debbie has more of a better idea how many guests they're going to make because – you know, you probably don't get as many walk-ins.
You'd
but
be surprised.
It's a
really? You never really know.
Yeah.
Really.
It's a crapshoot in a neighborhood, though.
Yeah. With us, I mean, neighborhood-style restaurants, I mean, so there are days where I wish I didn't take any reservations at all just so we would just be, okay, this is, you know, we'll just be ready, we're ready. But you have your cooks looking, and they're like, okay, we're going to have 20 people on tonight, and they get ready for that, and then all of a sudden, we've got 50 people, you know.
Wow.
And that doesn't sound like a big difference, but it's almost double the prep and double the, you know, and that just doubles the chances for something to go wrong and a guest to be upset or something. So you always have to be on your toes.
You know, Debbie, I would think at the American that the number of diners on any given night, any weekday night, would be fairly consistent. Or am I just flat wrong about that?
It is fairly consistent. But I'm surprised at how many people will walk into a fine dining establishment. I mean, and we're happy to serve anybody, but I don't know. Yeah. I'm always, you know, if I'm going to eat at a fine dining place, I'm making a reservation and I'm... But there's people that just come in.
Yeah, usually you think about it for a few days. Like that's my favorite thing to do is make a reservation at a great place and then be thinking about it for three or four
looking
days.
Looking forward to it.
You know, and you starve yourself all day long.
Yeah.
You know,
Now we're the only fine dining establishment in Crown Center. So that's been helpful.
Right.
And we're working a lot with the bar menu and happy hour and that kind of stuff. So, you know, trying to bring in people and from the area.
But it's crazy what people do because there's a Friday night. I had four people in the books. Four.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm getting a complex. Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
Like, what am I doing
on?
Wrong?
I ended up doing 130 people.
Oh, really?
I mean, it's like there's no rhyme or reason to what
how do you handle that? I mean, how do you?
You just say it's a Friday night. We're going to be busy. Let's do it. And then
You almost have to be part psychologist, part cheerleader, part businessman, woman.
You have to plan for it. If you don't plan for it, it's not going to happen, even if it you only have four reservations on
It's still a beautiful day. It's Friday. So you
have to be ready for it. Or otherwise, you won't have enough staff on. You won't have enough food. You won't, you know, it's, I'm not a huge sports fan, but I relate it to like a tennis player. They always say when you play tennis, you have to be moving back and forth on your feet just to be ready no matter where the ball goes. And if you're not,
you'll be caught flat-footed.
Yeah. So that's basically the business.
Being frantic, is that a rush or does it get old after a while, Selena?
No, I don't get frantic.
You don't?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
You just stay cool.
Yes.
That's because, our job. We have to.
Because if you go off, then your rest of your employees are getting upset,
well, no,
too.
No, but it really doesn't accomplish anything. Mm-hmm. Really, it slows the process down. You know, and if something you can say, we could have a party. It's supposed to start at 6 o'clock. Then somebody frantically walks down and says, they're here early. We have to go early. And then all of a sudden, it takes longer. It still goes out at 6 o'clock, even though you're rushing.
Right.
It would have been out earlier than that had they just, you know, stuck with a plan.
Ted, you stay cool, too?
Oh, absolutely.
You have to.
Yeah, you really have to. In fact, there's an oftentimes when, because one of the jobs that we all have is called being an expediter. And what that does is you're the person that kind of sees the plates as they're going out, and you're the one who kind of controls everything, the timing of stuff. And you have to be able to talk to the servers and to the cooks and to your captains, you know, and that sort of thing. And if you're nervous or if you're showing any sort of fear or something, then the other cooks start to feed off of it, and they'll start making mistakes.
So are you supervising or are you actually hands-on making stuff or both?
A little bit of both. You know, it depends on the situation and the night. A lot of times in really big nights where we have a lot of cooks, we're doing the sauces and kind of finishing plates, smelling everything, that sort of thing. But on, you know, on slower nights and to be honest, like sometimes on Saturday nights, I'm back there working on the grill.
Yeah. And so the satisfaction comes from where then, Debbie?
I guess, and that's a hard question. There's a lot of different parts to it. Obviously, the satisfaction comes when your customer is satisfied and had a great experience and loved the food. But it's also knowing that, you know, your entire staff, the front of the house staff and the back of the house staff worked together, made everything go out right. I mean, the hardest thing is, you know, when a cook tries to send out a terrible plate of food and you're, you know, that's the hard part. So really,
I've seen Debbie in action before. It's a lot of fun.
Well, how do you know? How
the whole orchestration works. Good.
Debbie, how do you know how satisfied your customers are if you're in the kitchen? How are you gauging that from your vantage point?
Well, you know, servers are your salespeople. Well, but your servers are your salespeople. I don't believe anything anybody says to me because they're going to be nice to me when I go out there.
Yeah.
They just do. It's really your servers, and you have to get honest feedback from your servers because they can be brutally honest to servers. They actually have one of the hardest jobs I know of. So as long as, you know, the servers can also make the dining experience for the guests. So if the servers, I always talk to the servers, and the other thing, a classic thing I think that most chefs do is they watch empty plates coming back into the kitchen to see if everything was eaten. And if it's not, you're like, why? What's that on?
What's
why didn't they?
On?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, before we take a break, our chef's challenge is about to begin. Oh. Why don't you all dip into take one slip of paper out of each of the four KCUR mugs.
Oh,
and when we come back
mug.
From our break, I want you to announce which different ingredients you pulled out and begin talking to us about how you're going to pull together a dish from the different things you've taken away. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. We're visiting today with three absolutely amazing chefs, Chef Ted Hebiger from Room 39 on 39th Street, Debbie Gold, executive chef at the American Restaurant, and Selena Teo, owner and executive chef from Julian in Brookside. And just before our last break, they each dipped their hands into four orange KCUR mugs and pulled out ingredients from four different categories, dairy, egg, protein, fruit, and then a wild card. And Selena, your little slips of paper are arrayed very neatly in front of you. What did you pull out?
I have whole leaf oolong tea, cottage cheese, I don't know what I'm doing with that yet. Pomegranate and beef liver.
Ooh,
wow.
My goodness. That's challenging to say the least. Yeah. Ted, what do you got?
I've got chicken leg quarters, dill, blood orange, and yogurt.
Hmm. Debbie?
I got fresh pineapple, ginger root, fresh whole trout, duck eggs.
Now, I'm gathering that none of these sound really easy to me. Am I wrong about that?
No,
Ted,
no,
you're
no.
laughing.
Ted's got the easiest.
I've got the easiest one for sure.
Yeah. And yours is the easiest because?
Well, I mean, you look at it, and first of all, chicken leg quarters was one of the things. We probably all eat this once a day,
basic
practically.
Stuff.
Yes.
And then the rest of my ingredients are kind of like an Indian food, so I immediately thought, well, I could just do Indian food here.
And perfect. You would do what?
Well, I was kind of rearranging my pieces of paper and so I could put them in order. But I would marinate the chicken leg quarters in a little bit of olive oil and dill.
Mm.
And then probably serve it with some sort of rice. And the sauce would end up being a blood orange yogurt sauce.
So it just, you didn't even break a sweat.
No,
it
actually reads, I mean, it's like, the way I put it in order, it's dill chicken leg quarters with blood orange yogurt. You know, I mean, it's actually pretty easy.
Yeah. So I have to rearrange mine.
Yeah.
Well, in your opinion, Ted, which of your two cohorts here have the hardest challenge?
I think Selena's got the hardest one.
Yeah, Selena.
Because she's got, I mean,
cottage cheese.
Well, she's got cottage cheese.
And liver.
And the liver, which is one of those things that we all love, but it also only goes with so many things. So.
Beef liver, pomegranate, cottage cheese, and whole, what's that one?
Oolong tea. I'd probably marinate the beef liver in oolong tea,
yep.
Make a pomegranate gastrique with that, and I still don't know what the heck
you're
to do
have
with
to
the
make
cottage
some sort of
eat
a creamy
eat the cottage cheese
well,
while you're...
Well, yeah, there you go. Nibble on the cheese.
If it weren't for the pomegranate, the oolong, I would make like a cottage cheese gnocchi, nudie, something.
Yeah,
there
yeah,
we go.
Yeah.
Fine,
that
but that doesn't go with the oolong, and so
yeah.
I'm still pondering.
You're still pondering.
Uh-huh.
We have to figure out if she can't figure it out, what we're going to do to her as a consequence of that here before.
I want to see this on the menu next week.
I could make like a little cottage cheese pancake to put the beef liver on.
That would be okay.
Yeah.
It's still weird with
you could
oolong
smoke
tea.
That tea, perhaps, and kind of do that lapsang souchong thing
yeah.
and cure it.
Well, I thought we were told we had like any ingredient in the world
you
to
do.
Go with
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
You could use just a really small amount of oolong tea.
Yeah.
No, I like the cottage cheese. I was just thinking maybe like a dip, though. I don't know why.
Yeah. Yeah.
Debbie, read off your four again.
I have fresh pineapple, ginger root, fresh whole trout, and duck eggs.
And you are thinking what?
I'm pretty much good. The pineapple throws me because we kind of messed this up, but I would make like... And the things going through my head is some sort of maybe of a ginger root pineapple broth of some sort, goujonette of the trout, which means you cut it into strips and deep fry it,
mm-hmm.
and poach the duck egg.
Hmm.
Perfect.
That's what
makes
I,
sense.
Yeah. Except
good.
The pineapple isn't my favorite, but it works.
Yeah,
I'll take your pineapple if you take
what
my
else
cottage
is it?
Cheese.
You don't like roasted red peppers either, right?
Good trick,
is that what it is?
Right?
No,
yeah.
I do like
yeah.
pineapple.
You do like
pineapple.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You're not supposed to get this.
I know.
Well,
to know
often,
only basis.
Speaking of this challenge, how often do you guys change up the menu at the American restaurant, Debbie?
That's really hard to say because I always go with the seasons of the food as opposed to the seasons of the year. I mean, these guys are shaking their head at me, but I don't think most people realize there is a season for food, and especially when you're working with the local farmers, seasons – in Kansas City go really quick because normally when we hit 100 degrees in August, it just sort of kills everything.
We almost have like eight seasons now.
So really it's what the farmers have. So they may have beets at the beginning in the spring and then they won't have beets until almost now again.
Mm-hmm.
So you put them on and then take them off and then you put them back on.
Mm.
You know, and a lot of fish these days has seasons because our waters are overfished, so they put limits on what the fishermen can pull by weight. So once, let's say, halibut's in season, although it's extremely expensive this year.
Yes.
It is. It's crazy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, they'll cut it off after they've fished the quota that, I mean, sort of nationally. So then you move
so
on.
It could be super short.
Yeah.
Or longer.
How is the over-harvesting of our oceans, how's that affecting your businesses when it comes to seafood products?
Well, I think like the price, just what, you know, one of the things that we see immediately is the prices. And so, for instance, 10 years ago, yellowfin tuna was, when I was working at Union Square, it was like $4.99 a pound. And now it's $14.99 a
yeah.
pound,
mm-hmm.
you know,
wow.
for good quality. Yeah. So, I mean, and what that is that's just trying to show that the demand is getting greater and the supply is getting smaller, mm-hmm. you know, and so the prices have been going up. I'm worried. You know, I watched an Alton Brown show the other day where he was pretending like he was 95 years old and he had his great-great-granddaughter with him and they were at a fish supermarket and the only thing available was squid. You know, which is a distinct possibility for us.
Where do you think we'll be 10 years from now based on the trends you're seeing?
Oh, gosh. You know, I don't know. You know, I know all of us probably have had this conversation in the last 5 years with ourselves and with producers where we're trying to find the most sustainable fish we can find.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I think it's irresponsible to serve certain fish to let's see, Chilean sea bass, for instance. You know, a Patagonian toothfish is what that's really called. But it's such a good fish. It's easy to cook. It's very moist. But it and maybe it's making a comeback now. But at one point it was almost extinct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about you, at your restaurant, Selena?
What was the question?
In terms of seafood and what you're seeing
same
by
thing.
The over-harvesting of
with,
the oceans.
With,
yeah.
With proteins, my kind of thing is I want to have a sustainable product, you know, a farm fish. And I think the direction is a lot of producers are now going to, you know, high quality, sustainable farms that there are all sorts of ones now that you can get, you know, shrimp and fish
yeah.
and trout and everything
yeah.
that they just change the practices to be more sustainable and give better product.
What are the most popular dishes at your restaurants? And are you seeing a trend in terms of our Kansas Cityans going for certain things these days? Have you noticed anything, Ted, at Room 39?
Well, I think one thing that we started out right away with one of our farmers, Camp Olinda Farm up in Lathrop, Missouri, they brought us chicken livers, and we all were kind of excited about that, and we said, can you bring us more? And they were like, sure, nobody really wants them. And I'm like, well, keep bringing us chicken livers.
You'll take mine.
And,
no,
yeah.
chicken.
I'm not taking hers. And these restaurants yeah. withstanding, but, you know, it's probably a hard sell in the grocery store, so they don't sell a lot of chicken livers. But people come back, and it's one thing we've never been able to take off our menu.
Mm-hmm.
It's our chicken livers with bacon, capers, and shallots.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Debbie, how about you?
Oh, I'm just trying to think. Right now, it's just I think people are trying to get the end of the summer, what's left of tomatoes and whatever's mm-hmm. freshest. I'm using a lot of zucchini from one of my farmers.
I'm wrapping up zucchini and yellow squash and the melons and the mm-hmm. corn.
And yeah,
it's almost
Kansas
like one of those
City.
Times where we're like, okay, let's take it off the menu now.
Now.
Even
mm-hmm.
though we can still get like the last little bits.
Oh,
we're
I'm
like,
still
okay.
getting it.
Yeah, I took the melon salad off last night. I was like, okay, I'm done. It's still pretty good, but I think I'm ready to move on to something new.
Yeah.
Well I promise it.
It's sprouts and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
I promise as the show began, we'd answer this question: is Kansas City a cutthroat restaurant town or more of a supportive restaurant town? What's been your experience?
Friendly competition.
Friendly competition.
Yes. Yeah. We're all about all of us being. I mean, we're a really small, tight community, which I am finding is the same in a lot of different professions, but we all know each other for the most part. And it's really about everybody being successful. And there is the competition, obviously, because it is your business. It is, you know, you're still trying to support your mm-hmm. family and
yeah.
whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we all want to be, we want everyone to be successful.
To succeed.
So,
yeah.
I know that guests are not eating in my restaurant 7 nights a week. So why do I not recommend them to Room 39
yeah.
or
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
or the American Restaurant or Blue Stem or wherever.
And you do that.
I do,
absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it works okay.
Yeah, totally.
And we are back here with our incredible chefs, Chef Ted Habiger from Room 39, Debbie Gold from the American Restaurant, and Selena Teo from Julian in Brookside. We're just talking over life in the kitchen and all kinds of things. Selena, what's the one thing that diners would never guess about you?
I have no idea.
You're sloppy at home, you're neat at home. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm sloppy at home. I don't know.
You never eat chocolate. I just heard
I could,
you say
yes,
it.
Yes, I could go the rest of my life and never have another piece of chocolate.
And you're a
and
chef.
And I would be okay with that.
Yeah.
That's just not my thing. I'm a salty. I'm a salty thing.
Yeah.
Salty
Ted,
she is salty.
Very salty. Very salty. Only off microphone. That's good. I have a dump
for
me. Here either,
What's weird about me? Well, I get a. I have a condition that I call post-rush depression, or PRD.
Oh, really?
That sometimes after a very busy night, when it's especially hectic and always in a good way, I sometimes kind of get into this little state where I will actually cry.
Really?
Yeah. Aww. And I will be, like, depressed because the adrenaline is gone. You know, yeah. It's one of the things. Yeah. I mean, we're adrenaline junkies in the kitchen. And when that adrenaline kind of disappears at the end of the night, we usually supplant that with a nice beer of some sort or a glass of wine. But yeah, I've been known to cry on
Debbie?
Occasion.
Well, seeing how we were just talking about it for the last few minutes, I have a whole laundry list of foods I personally don't like. I don't
like
eat
what?
A lot of food.
Like what?
Main one, I don't like tomatoes.
Really?
Weird.
I don't eat tomatoes.
That is crazy.
That is kooky
talk.
I'm glad you're saying that because I was going to say that.
Yeah. And, you know, I had a friend of mine that said, I bet you're a super taster. Now, I know how it's supposed to taste. I know how I want it to taste, but I personally wouldn't sit down and eat it. So when everybody in the summer goes, wow, I just went to the farmer's market and got these great tomatoes. Let's eat tomatoes and mozzarella. I won't eat the tomatoes.
What do you eat after a long night in the restaurant kitchen, Ted?
If I'm at the restaurant, one of my favorite things is just like a poached egg with some sort of beef sauce, like a veal stock sauce. That's the French call it ouf en mirette, and it's one of my absolute favorite things. Now, if I'm at home. I usually open up the fridge and find anything that's in there, and I can often be found eating about 9 Chips Ahoy and a big glass of milk. Yeah.
So, Lena,
I also love hot
you?
Dogs. You know, that's
yeah.
a big
I love
big
hot
thing
dogs.
I really gosh, don't man. Eat. Oh, that would be the surprising thing that would surprise guests. I never eat at home.
Really?
I never eat at home, ever.
You don't have much in the kitchen? You don't have much in the fridge?
She's
no.
got beer in the fridge. I've seen beer in her fridge.
Yeah. I do not eat at home because I take Maya to school. I'm at the restaurant all day. I go home late at night. I go to sleep.
How close is home to the restaurant?
4 miles.
Okay.
Pretty close.
Not too far. Debbie, what do you eat after a long night?
Usually you can find me eating a piece of chocolate. Or if it's been a long day and I've been running around and really haven't had time to eat, I like a nice piece of cheese.
Mm-hmm.
I'll eat a
good.
Little, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that always works.
What's on your menu, Debbie, that you won't eat because you're simply tired of cooking it?
Tomato salad.
Tomato salad. Nothing with tomatoes. We're getting that picture pretty clearly here. Ted?
Well, I kind of talked about it earlier. I'm tired of the melon salad. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm done with that.
Selena?
I'm not tired of it, but it needs to change probably the house-smoked salmon on the deviled egg salad.
Mm.
But guess go gaga for
that. That sounds good right now.
People love it.
Ted, did you ever create a dish that became a fan favorite and then you sort of wound up regretting keeping it because you hate making it so much?
Oh, gosh. Usually by that time you're not really, you know, your cooks are the ones making it at that point.
Mm. And they're hating you.
And they're hating
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
I can't think of a specific example at the moment. That probably happens quite more often than you'd think, though.
Yeah. Debbie?
I don't know that I hate making it, but I seem to not be able to go anywhere and not make lemon meringue pie.
Mm, yes. Mm. I've actually made her recipe.
I've stolen
it from her before.
Does that happen a lot
it.
In the restaurant?
Sure.
Biz? You eat something you really like and say, hey, give me that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There was a time I was at the American and I had like kind of popped wild rice. And I've used that. I've got it on my menu right now. I know.
Hey, we're out of time. I want to thank all of you guys for coming in today. Again, Chef Ted Habiger from Room 39, Debbie Gold from the American Restaurant, and Selena Teo from Julian and Brookside. I had a great time with you guys. Thanks for a lot for taking
thanks
time
for
to come in.